ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
We'll conclude today with the topic of Krishna's role in Mahabharata. In fact, without him, we have no reason to discuss about Mahabharata. We could discuss Second World War, or the First World War, or the future Third World War. Therefore, Prabhupada explains in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that we have interest in Kurukshetra because Krishna is there. There was a Gita conference, and they invited Prabhupada to go to Gita conference. When he came there was a simply big light. There was no picture of Krishna. Prabhupada said, "Where is Krishna?" They said, "Our interest is only in Gita, not in Krishna." So, the purpose of Gita is to reveal Krishna. And if Krishna is not there in Gita, then it is not Gita. It is like, you want the energy but not the energetic. It is like the philosophy of Ravan. Ravan wanted Sita but not Krishna, Lord Ram. Therefore he was killed. Or in the Mahabharata, how many kinds of people Krishna had to meet with? Ashwatthama, he was the son of a Brahmana. We were discussing today morning how Krishna in advance had given Sudarshan Chakra to Amrish Maharaj for his protection. And somebody asked Sudarshan Chakra from Krishna. Ashwatthama, he came one day to Krishna in Dwarka and he said, "Can you give me your Sudarshan Chakra and I'll give you my Brahmastra?" Yeah, Krishna said, "I don't need your Brahmastra, you can take my Sudarshan Chakra." But how can you handle Sudarshan Chakra? Unless Krishna gives you the way he gave it to Amrish Maharaj, he tried to hold Sudarshan Chakra with his limited power. And what's his power compared to the power of the Supreme Lord? He naturally could not handle the Sudarshan Chakra. And he said, "Okay, I don't need, I'm going back." Krishna said, "Why you wanted Sudarshan Chakra?" I said, "To kill you." So he was very honest because he was a Brahmana. So he spoke very honestly, "I wanted Sudarshan Chakra to kill you." So people want Krishna's book, Krishna's Shastra, Mahabharata, Bhagavat, Ramayana, Bhagavad Gita. It is Krishna's copyright. Everyone who takes this book and twists and turns and writes according to their own whims and wisps, what they are doing? They are simply stealing from Krishna. They are no better than Ashwatthama. Take Krishna's Shastra and kill Krishna. The same principle is applied. One is Krishna's weapon, which is Sudarshan, and one is Krishna's Shastra, that is also Sudarshan, auspicious. Therefore, Shastra, as we discussed, was never given to anybody and everybody. Just because you know how to read and write, you can't read. You should not be reading. Because one will become like Ashwatthama, will try to use against Krishna. Therefore, when we study carefully under the guidance of a parampara, guru and sadhu and shastra, then the understanding will be revealed. Why? Because before giving the understanding, they create the intention. They make our mood, our spirit proper. If the intention is right, the understanding comes automatically. Otherwise, you hear the same story, like the destruction of the forest. When Hanumanji destroyed the beautiful garden of Ravan, Ravan got to hear with his 20 years the glories of Hanumanji. "Oh, Hanumanji is so great." When we read Sundar Kand, it is beautiful Kand. Valmiki names it as Sundar Kand. But when we read it, you become happy. "Oh, Hanumanji did such a wonderful job destroying." But the same news when Ravana heard, he became extremely angry. He said, "How could somebody do that?" Again, Sugriva, the same monkeys came back. Now they are not alone, not only Hanumanji. All the monkeys were there. And they came and destroyed the garden of Sugriv called Madhuban. If you go to Hampi, that garden is still existing. They destroyed it. And the soldiers, the guards of those garden went and informed Sugriv that the monkeys have destroyed your garden. He became very happy. Great news. That means their efforts of knowing about Sita has been successful. He could connect, but Ravan could not connect. The same story, same monkeys, same garden destroying. One became happy with one pair of ears, 2 years. And Lankesh Ravana had 20 years and he was not happy. So it is not simply the story. It is not reading Mahabharata. It is not reading Bhagavad. It is not reading Gita. It is who is reading. Who is giving you to read. Milk for someone can nourish and for someone else it can cause indigestion. So therefore, when we hear from the proper source, again and again repeatedly it is spoken that hearing from the proper source, you have the right to be, you know, analytical, you have the right to be open-minded, you have the right to be, you know, large. But being large-hearted doesn't mean that hearing from a source which is limited in regards to giving transparent knowledge. And this is what happens with Mahabharata. Mahabharata, fortunately, yes, still people read it. In fact, Vyasadeva says, eating my jhuta, you know, by taking his leftover, people will become prosperous. And we are seeing it. We see how people taking Mahabharata, they are making lots of money. It is not their knowledge, it is Vyasadeva's knowledge. They should give him some royalty. The royalty of what? Being loyal to Mahabharata. The loyalty to what Vyasadeva presents. So therefore, the very first principle, Krishna's part in Mahabharata, Krishna's part in the battle of Kurukshetra, it is explained by Vyasadeva in the beginning only, as we discussed on the first day, that it is to glorify Krishna. If your conclusion do not reach Krishna's glorification, you never read Mahabharata. If it leads to, you know, condemning, chastising, blaspheming Krishna, do not existing is his reality, then you never read Mahabharata. In fact, there is nothing but glory of Krishna in the Mahabharata. Of course, may not be directly as Bhagavatam, but certainly one who reads the Bhagavatam, one who is the student of Bhagavat, one who is a Vaishnava, when he reads Mahabharata, he becomes fascinated by the character of Krishna. Therefore, Krishna, it's one thing to say, we usually say, you know, God can do anything and everything. That is the best answer we have. When we can't answer anything, why Krishna did like this? He's God. But sometime this answer sounds, for someone who is reasonable, just because you are God, you can do anything. That means if you become powerful, if you have power, if you have wealth, that means whatever you do, is it that it's a right thing? That brings the quality in God of dictatorship and acting, breaking his very law. In the Bhagavad Gita 3rd chapter, Krishna explains that I have no duties. Name partasti kartavyam trishu lokeshu kinchanam. I have no duties, but still I act. If I don't act according to Shastra, then I will put everybody in ruination. And Prabhupada writes, Krishna does not break any principle of Shastra. So today, in this session, we all know Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can do anything and everything. He can create something and he can immediately destroy. He has that right to do and we should not object. But today we will not discuss Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Only discuss Krishna based upon the Shastra. His behavior in Mahabharata, was it sanctioned in scriptures? That we will try to discuss. And we will see how even in the Shastra, If you study carefully, Krishna's behavior does not conflict with the Shastric rules and regulation. The first principle is, in the Mahabharata it is explained, Krishna, the strategy which he used in regards to dealing with world, in regards to establishing dharma, when he came to this material world, Sukadeva Goswami begins in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that why did he come here? He came here because Prithvi was overburdened by Kshatriyas, who were posing to be Kshatriyas but were causing unlimited harm. Very interesting, people always say, why God does not come now? But when he came and did something good, they say, why did he do like that? This kind of question they ask, you know, why God does not come now? Because there are so many bad politicians. But when he actually dealt with the bad politicians the way he is supposed to deal, so many people ask this question, why Krishna did like that? Why did he ask Bhima to kill Duryodhan like that? Why did Krishna tell Arjuna to kill Dronacharya like that? Why Krishna asked Arjuna to kill Karna like that? Why did he kill Eklavya like that? That means you don't know, those politicians were much worse than what we are experiencing now. So, in the Mahabharata, Vyasadeva explains, it was not Yuddha Tantra, that is Dharma Tantra. What is Dharma Tantra? What is Dharma? A Dharma, it is not pinned on the wall. Dharma is flowing like a river. And as the situation changes, we see in this world only, you know, when you are traveling in America, there are different laws. When you are traveling in India, there are different laws. In this world only, the rules change as you go from one place to another place. So recently, somebody carried khaskhas to, you know, this in Muslim countries in Dubai and other parts. Somebody sent an article. What is khaskhas? Khaskhas is one of the best ingredient for making some Indian item. And there the khaskhas led that person to jail for 20 years. Why? Because from their point of view, khaskhas has the, you know, inherent quality of being drug. You can kill the cows, that's okay. But you can't carry khaskhas. That will lead you to 20 years in jail. In some place, carrying Bible or Bhagavad Gita would take you to jail for 20 years. In Russia, if anybody brings Shastra, bringing Shastra or bringing opium was considered the same crime. So in this world, rules, one has to say, one can't say, are in my country, eating khaskhas is okay, no problem, how can you handle me? Like, no, you have to know the rule and act according to the laws of the local situation. Similarly, the rules change, and because the rules change, adaptability has to be expected, followed. And this is the beauty of Krishna. Beauty of Krishna is the first thing what Krishna did was, when he appeared in this material world with the purpose of establishing dharma, in Vrindavan, whatever Krishna performed his pastime, that has nothing to do with dharma. That is only has to do with prema. Whatever demons he killed, whatever pastimes he performed, it was a private, homely, you know, retreat. No, his childhood was full of prema. There is nothing to learn from Vrindavan, only to involve and absorb and get fully. You go to Vrindavan Leela and ask question, then you are not meant for it. Vrindavan Leela is not meant for asking question. Vrindavan Leela is meant for getting absorbed. But how long Krishna did that? Only for 11 years. And he came to Mathura and he killed Kamsa. And after killing Kamsa, immediately Krishna sent a messenger in the form of Akrura, warning Dhritarashtra. Very interesting. Just see how the Lord was very updated with what was happening. He was enjoying in Vrindavan, but at the same time very much informed, you know, the world situation. His personal absorption in Leela did not deter from his service. Sometime we have a problem. If you do one thing, we can't do second thing. When I was always wondering why this rishi, it was Agastya Rishi, I think, or Gautam, who cursed King Indradyumna to become an elephant? Agastya Rishi? Agastya Rishi cursed Indradyumna Maharaj to become an elephant. I would always wonder, how could you curse someone who was absorbed in meditation? You are deeply absorbed in meditation, you know, thinking of God, and a sage comes, he should be happy to see someone is absorbed in meditation, but rather he gets a curse. But the very nature of absorption in Krishna means serving others. If your absorption does not lead you to that level, okay, the sage has come, you have to rise and take care of him. He did not do that. And therefore naturally, he had to receive the body of an elephant. So there is no fault in Agastya Rishi. The fault lies with the king only. His absorption had to extend in the form of service to those who are in need. He did not do that. So therefore, Krishna was absorbed in Leela, but at the same time, Krishna was involved in the world. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, when he was living in Gambhira, you know, he was in the third state of consciousness. There is full conscious, there is semi-consciousness, and there is absolutely no consciousness of the material world. When he was not conscious of the material world, he would be living in that small Gambhira room, and sometime he would go and brush his face to the wall of Gambhira. And Gambhira's wall didn't have Italian marble. No? It was very rough. When he would rub his face would bleed. It would bruise and there would be bleeding. And then devotees appointed a guard. He said, no, if Lord Chaitanya does like that, it's not good for him. They appointed Shankar Pandit as the guard. And Shankar Pandit would be guarding Mahaprabhu. And while guarding Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, security guard, whether it is Shankar Pandit or it is, you know, Trig, in the night time they have to go to sleep. So Shankar Pandit, while guarding Mahaprabhu, he would go to sleep. And Mahaprabhu, seeing him sleep, he would take out his uttariya and cover his body as a chadar. So what does the absorption do? Absorption allows one to see others' need and concern. Very interesting point. And Mahaprabhu did that. So Krishna is in Vrindavan enjoying his pastime. He came to Mathura, he killed Kamsa, instantly understood everything what's happening. He sent a message to Hastinapur. Killing Kamsa, naturally he was creating a lot of troubles, no doubt. But at the same time, Kamsa was one of the biggest hurdle. How was he hurdle? Because Jarasan, we discussed one of the days, Jarasan wanted to be the emperor of the world. He wanted to be an emperor of the world. And therefore he was preparing. He married his daughter to Kamsa, Jassi. We discussed, you know, making their daughters as a scapegoat. He married Kamsa, his daughters, both the daughters. So the relationship is established. By establishing that relationship, what will happen? Kamsa will become his assistant. Then Rukmi wanted to marry his sister to Shishupal. So all this gang wanted to come together, support Jarasandha, and everybody would get some sort of facilities to be party in the rule of Jarasandha. So first thing what Krishna did, he removed Kamsa, he killed Kamsa, send a message to Dhritarashtra, you know, this is what will happen if you don't deal him with Pandavas properly. And Krishna had not met the Pandavas, but he was very much well aware of Pandavas. Because Pandavas, if you study carefully, not only they were appointed as the emperor eventually by Krishna, but he also used the Pandavas. The Bhagavatam came because Pandavas, Parikshit Maharaj. The Bhagavad Gita came because of Pandavas, Arjun. The Mahabharata came because of Pandavas, Janmejaya Rishi. If these people were not there, then Krishna would have no impetus to speak. They gave him the inspiration. In fact, after the battle was over, one day Arjuna was strolling with Krishna, and he told Krishna, "Krishna, can you speak the Bhagavad Gita?" Krishna said that is not drama words. You know, I learned it, then again I repeated after 1 year. Even the actors don't repeat. Only on the stage, when there is an inspiration, you know, their favorite fans are sitting, then they can repeat. Krishna said, my speaking Bhagavad Gita was inspired by your difficulties. It was my song out of compassion. It is not a prepared, you know, notebook, and I spoke to you, and again I repeat it. Then Krishna spoke something else. He was inspired to speak something else. That is called as Anu Gita, more complex than Bhagavad Gita in the Mahabharata. Goes for many, many chapters. Krishna spoke like that. He was inspired by Arjuna to speak Bhagavad Gita. And then Krishna spoke Shukadeva Goswami spoke Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj. Parikshit Maharaj's great quality, the way he handled the situation of being cursed by Shamik Rishi, took everything as his responsibility, and seeing Parikshit Maharaj's disposition, Shukadeva Goswami is forced to come there. Who would not go to anybody's place more than, you know, milking of the cows? How long does it take to milk one glass of cow? One glass of milk, not more than one, less than a minute in those time. One time you pull, you know, the udder, the whole glass will be filled, then he goes to the next place. But he stayed there for 7 days. What inspired him to speak? The disposition, the qualities of Parikshit Maharaj. And then the Vaishampayana Rishi spoke Janamejaya Mahabharata, and all this was compiled and written by Srila Vyasadeva. So Pandava's contribution in regards to history, in regards to establishing Dharma, because they were all eternal associates of the Lord. So Krishna, when he wanted to establish Pandavas, not because they were his relatives, as we discussed also, Shishupal was also, same thing, Shishupal was also his father's sister's son. And Pandavas were also his father's sister's son. Same sisters, same father, same children in one sense. But why did he kill Shishupal and why did he not kill Pandavas? Because Krishna was not partial to Pandavas, he was partial to Dharma. In fact, we discussed in the first day that this huge tree, what tree? The tree of Dharma Mayo. Yudhishthira Dharma Mayo, that Yudhishthira Maharaj is the tree of Dharma and Arjun is the Skanda, Bhima is the Shaka, and all the Nakul and Sahadeva or Samurdha Pushpa Phale. And who is the root of that tree? Krishna, Brahma and Brahmanas. Krishna is the root of that tree, and Krishna's root is the Vedas. Even though all Vedas come from him, Krishna does not break the Shastric rule. The difference between Krishna and Lord Buddha. Buddha came and he said, do not follow Vedas. And Krishna also said, transcend the Vedas. What is the difference between transcending the Vedas and not following the Vedas? One is, when you don't follow Vedas, you become atheist. Prabhupada writes, when you transcend the Vedas, you grab the essence of the Vedas. Now, you don't break the Vedic rule, but you realize the Vedic rule. Krishna said, Traigunya Vishay Veda, Nistraigunya Bhava Arjuna, Nirdando Nitya Sattvasto, Niryogakshema Atmavan. That is the difference. Krishna created revolution, but not outside the scripture. If you study again the Buddhistic philosophy, Lord Buddha came, taught atheism, and because he taught atheism, along with that he taught non-violence also. The non-violence is gone, but the atheism remains. Somewhere in Burma, there are 500,000 monks. And what is their food? Cow flesh. In Thailand also, they say whatever comes to our plate, we eat. After all, because we should not make any discrimination. And most of the time in their plate, they go to that place only where their cow flesh is available. And Prabhupada writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when you go away from the Vedas, you become hypocrite. Even that small principle of non-violence cannot be practiced, because what is the foundation? the foundation to practice non-violence is Vedas, and that is not there, what non-violence can you practice? You can't practice it. Therefore, Krishna fulfilled the meaning of the Vedas, did not reject the Vedas. And then, as we're discussing Dharma Tantra, what is the difference between war strategy and the strategy for establishing Dharma? In one Sunday lecture, we discuss that there are three tantras. There is Brihaspati Niti, there is Shukra Niti, and then this Kanika, one who trained the Kurus in the principle of how to handle the opposing party. Kanika had come to Dhritarashtra, he was from Afghanistan only. Shakuni brought him. No, he brought him there and he gave the advice. He said, my dear Dhritarashtra, whatever it takes you to rule, by good means or bad means, to become selfish, whatever it takes, for practicing dharma, adharma, he said, don't have any rule in your life. Whatever makes you feel good, to receive that, whatever it takes you should do. You need to kill your friends, kill them. You need to kill your family members, kill them. And in killing, do not feel guilt. Be cruel as possible, but while being cruel also laugh. Have a nice smile on your face. And if you need to go to the temple for that, go to the temple. If you need to go to the church, go to the church also. If you need to go to the mosque also, go to mosque also. But don't believe in any of these three things. So Kanika was ruthlessly speaking this, and after speaking this, the next thing what the Kurus did was they burned the palace of the Pandavas in Varanavat, because that's what he said, kill them. That became the foundational principle of the behavior of the Kurus. If someone is behaving like that, the Brihaspati Niti does not work. What is Brihaspati Niti? Brihaspati Niti is, if you want to do good to society, only follow the good path. However difficult it is, follow the good path. In no time, follow the bad path. If you can't get your things done by telling truth, don't speak lie. How will it work? And if you're doing a business with a crooked man, ask the business people, you know he's the 100% crooked. When you know he's 100% crooked, can you be honest with him? He will ruthlessly slaughter you. Honesty will not work with him. You have to see how he deals with him, how to interact with him. So, Brihaspati Niti was already thrown in the air by the Kuru people. So, naturally, Brihaspati Niti will not work. So, which Niti was applied by Krishna? Shukra Niti. What is Shukra Niti? Shukracharya said, for achieving good thing, sometime if you need to use bad discipline, it is okay. I remember... somebody was asking this question to Jayadvat Maharaj. You know, why Krishna did what he did? You know, he said, just like when a mother is giving medicine to the child, and sometimes the child does not want to take medicine, and you have to trick, you have to tell so many lies. And he gave the example, you know, when the child is not taking medicine, the mother is telling the story, how the plane is flying in the sky, and the spoon is moving in the sky. The mother is taking the plane is going in the sky, making all the sound. And eventually she takes the spoon all over, and the child is looking up and slowly opens the mouth. And the plane, you know, goes around and slowly starts landing. And where does it land? Lands in the mouth of the baby. He said, is it a falsity? Is it wrong thing? Because the child is not willing to take the medicine, it is mother's responsibility. Even with creating falsity, illusion in the mind of child, some other place that medicine in the mouth. So, to deal with the Kurus, because they are crooked, there was no law. Just imagine when they went to the forest, the Pandavas, what was the rule? 12 years and 1 year. If you come back, you will get your kingdom. And what did they say? What to speak of kingdom? Not even a place for put your needle. And what did Dhritarashtra say? he sent Sanjay, he told, "My dear Pandavas, I am very much afraid that I don't want to see the death of my Gyatis." Gyatis means relatives. What does he say? "I don't want to see the death of all of you." Just say his confidence. He told them, "I don't want to see the death of yours. Therefore, don't fight. And anyway, you know, you are accustomed to living in the forest. Since you are accustomed to living in the forest, and my sons are accustomed to living in the palace, let them live in the palace and you all continue to live in the forest. Why create this war? I think you are adapted to the profession of begging. Therefore, better beg. And where you beg, don't beg in Hastinapur. If you beg in Hastinapur, people will criticize me. Go and beg in Dwarka." He actually sent a message like this. Can you imagine? He was a weak person. The blind guy was very crooked. A demon number one. He is telling this to Pandavas. And maybe that affected Arjuna during the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He kept on repeating, you know, "Let me go to the forest, live on begging." So, to deal with such people who break their promise every other moment, if they were good, Krishna would have said, "Okay, you know what, ultimately it doesn't matter who rules. I am not interested in who rules. But it matters the dharmic people should rule." In the Ramayana, for Ram it did not matter if Bharat rules. Why? Because Bharat was as good as Lord Ram in regards to ruling the people. The battle between Bharat and Ram in regards to who should rule in Chitrakoot is a very wonderful. If you study Ramayana, you know, Bharat raised 20 or more than that objections why he should not be ruling and why Ram should rule, and used all the Shastric principle. Ram should have said, "Yeah, you are right, you know, I should come back and rule." And Ram quoted better Shastra to convince Bharat, "I can't be ruling, you have to rule." So there was a strategy. Whatever Ram did, people say, "Just see, Ram is so good and Krishna is bad." No, you are bad because you don't know how to understand. The strategy of Ram giving up Ayodhya was what? For so that Bharat can rule, he can come to the forest, face Ravana, destroy Ravana. In going to the forest, he achieved many things. It is not about breaking or it is not about not breaking. It is about what helps you achieve dharma. So in Ramayana, Ram could achieve everything by not breaking the law, and Krishna had to achieve everything by breaking the law. One should follow the law. One should follow the rules like Krishna followed, like Ram followed, and one should break the law the way Krishna broke. Unless you are the Supreme Personality of God. Other we are supposed to follow the injunctions of the Shastra and the spiritual masters. So that was the Dharma Tantra. It is not war strategy. It is purely Dharma Tantra. And one of the Dharma Tantra Krishna played, Mahabharata explains, that this Sanjay spoke to Dhritarashtra. He said, "My dear Dhritarashtra, Krishna, how does he function? He has Kala Chakra, Yuga Chakra, and Yoga Chakram Cha Keshava. And then he explains, Atma Yogena Bhagwan Pariyartite Anisham. That this Kala Chakra, there is Dharma Chakra and there is Yuga Chakra. Krishna said that I will not raise weapon. It was not his pratigya. It is not pratigya, rather it is strategy. It is explained, if you study carefully Mahabharata, if Krishna would raise, he said, "I am going to raise weapon," nobody would come there to fight. And nobody would come to fight. They would only delay their nastiness. No? Okay, now Krishna is going to raise weapons. Like when Krishna killed Shishupal, Duryodhan saw that. Shakuni saw it. They didn't raise their words. But that doesn't mean that they surrendered. Only it was delayed. So Krishna killed Shishupal, but they got scared. If Krishna raises weapons, what will happen? Then you will not actually know what is people's mentality. You don't surrender to God just because God sends you chastising rod. That is the beauty of Krishna. Krishna does not create fear. You know, unless you surrender to me, I am going to destroy you. That is not the style of Bhagavatam. That is not the style of Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, Krishna, after speaking the whole Bhagavad Gita, I told Arjun, my dear Arjun, if you have not understood, I am willing to speak it again. I will speak once again. I will speak repeatedly many times. But ultimately, you have to make the decision to surrender or not to surrender. He said, yathochasi tata kuru. This principle is the principle of Bhagavad Dharma. God does not force one to surrender. He rather creates facility for them to take shelter. So if Krishna had raised his weapon, what would happen? That the war would not take place. Nobody would come to know who is at whose side. Therefore Krishna said, hey Arjun, look. He said, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, if I am there, I am not going to raise any weapons. So immediately Kuru Kaurava said, what is the use of this Krishna? He does not, just see, that was the working, the strategy started working. If this Krishna does not raise his weapon, what is the point? No, I don't want Krishna, I want Krishna's energy. He took the army and Arjuna said, I want you only. Krishna said, what is the point in taking me? He said, it doesn't matter. Whatever you do, my Lord, whether you raise weapon, you don't raise weapon, I don't care. I want to be with you. That was the confidence Arjuna had. Just imagine somebody tells you, somebody tells me that, you know, that you only get Krishna but nothing what belongs to Krishna. Only Krishna. Do you have the conviction to say, I want only Krishna but not Krishna's energy? You know, we'll say, no, okay, Krishna I need, but along with Krishna I need Krishna's Lakshmi also. You know, Krishna's Brahma also, Krishna's Shiva also. Krishna's this also, Krishna's that also. We want Krishna, but we want Krishna along with the paraphernalia of Krishna. And then we worship Krishna superficially, but we are more attached to Krishna's energy. So Arjuna's conviction to say, I don't want anything but Krishna. Krishna said, you are a fool, what will I do? I am not going to do anything. He said, doesn't matter. And what was Duryodhana saying? Hey, this Arjuna is a fool. He doesn't know how to behave only. Therefore they were in the forest. I am so intelligent. You know, I got the army of Krishna and this useless Vasudev is not going to raise weapons. Now they are finished. So he was convinced about what he was thinking and Arjuna was convinced what about what he was thinking. Both were convinced. And whose conviction was greater? The war decided. So Krishna did not raise weapons. Why? Because it is explained, Kala Chakram. He has a weapon in the form of Kala. And what does this Kala do? Mahabharata explains, the Kala performs such a precise act of destroying the brain substance. It destroys the brain substance of all the warriors. In fact, there is a Niti verse, it says that there are the two greatest fools in this world. Dvamima Purusho Loke. That the greatest fools are Ravan and Duryodhan. Dashanana and Duryodhana. Why they are the greatest fool? He said they experience the power. Ravan experienced the power of one monkey soldier. Hanumanji said, I am the most insignificant soldier of Ram because you don't send the most powerful person as the messenger. An ordinary person is sent. Just imagine if I can alone destroy your Lanka, if the army of Ram comes, if Ram personally comes, can you imagine what he could do? Very simple maths. But Ravan never went to maths class. He didn't like maths. He said, no. You know, this sometime this may happen like this. He did not listen. And this Niti verse says, Arjun alone destroyed the entire Kuru army in the Virata battle. The boasting Karna, the powerful Dronacharya, the unconquerable Bhishma, Bhurishrava, Ashwathama, Duryodhan. You know, Arjuna was playing with Duryodhan as if Duryodhan was like a mouse or a rat and Arjuna was like a cat. If you study that part of the Mahabharata, he was running there, he was running here, he was running there, he was running here. And Arjuna was harassing him so much. He took a lot of pleasure. He did not kill him because Bhima had taken a vow. He made them unconscious alone in the battle of Virata. Just imagine, without Bhima, without Krishna, without his army, anybody would think, if this person can defeat alone all of our army, and I don't have any other army other than this army, these are the most important people, he has defeated alone Krishna, I should surrender. No. Therefore, these are the two greatest fools in the history of entire world, Ravana and Duryodhan. They did not change. So, Krishna not raising weapon was a strategy. Because what happened? By Kala Chakra, their intelligence was spoiled. When somebody's intelligence spoiled by the demigods, they always take wrong steps. And that's what they did. And then Yuga Chakra is the Yuga Chakra of, you know, even the Manvantaras, even the Yugas roll by the power of Krishna's Yuga Chakra. And then Yoga Chakra is the Yoga Chakra principle of karma. Karma gives you certain connection. When you perform good deeds, you get good results. When you perform bad deeds, you get bad results. So that is Yoga. That is Yuga Chakra. So when Krishna has this three chakra, why does he need Sudarshan Chakra? He didn't want to raise the weapon. He said, because with this three chakra, I will handle the entire Kuru race. And I said, I will not raise weapon. Openly declared. When he openly declared, I will not raise weapons, everybody clarified their intentions, where they want to stand. And that's what Krishna wanted to see. Where do they stand? What is their goal? And by doing that, what happened? Entire 18 Akshayani Sanya came there. And without any chakra, Krishna destroyed. Only time he raised his weapon was when Jayadrath was supposed to be killed. He did not actually know. The Mahabharata explained, usually some people say, when Jayadrath was hiding, it was becoming late, Arjuna could not kill. So Krishna had to create what? A mystic power. In few places Krishna did use his not divine powers. Now they are beyond humanity. They are not beyond, they are beyond humans. No human being can perform that task. Usually people say, many Mahabharata writes that Krishna sent his Sudarshan Chakra. Now Sudarshan Chakra is more powerful than sun god. It will not create darkness, rather it will create greater brightness. So naturally Jayadrath will hide more. And then people make another story, because Sudarshan Chakra was cursed, therefore he became dark. Now you can't curse Krishna's weapon. There is no such story. Mahabharata says, by his mystic power, Krishna created the illusion. Basically, ordered sun god, go behind. And sun god has to follow the order. And the darkness was created, and Jayadrath, he was in ecstasy. He came out running. You know, he came out running, jumping right in presence of Arjuna, lost his sense of intelligence, and all the Kurus were very happy. And Krishna told Arjuna, Arjuna, shoot him. But Arjuna looked, there is no sun. He said, shoot. And when he came closer, Krishna told, shoot him in this way, that one weapon, one arrow should remove his head, and another arrow should take his head to his father's lap. Krishna is telling such an impossible task, but it was no impossible task for Arjuna. He did it. And everyone was about to say, what is this? And the sun rose again. Krishna said, come back. The sun came back. And they could see, the sun is there. So now this does not fall into the category of you and me cheating. We can't say the sun come and go. How does it work? This work under the divine energy of the Lord. It is not human, it is simply divine. So Krishna never used any weapon. When he raised the cart wheel to kill Bhishma Dev, because Arjuna was not fighting, it was not to kill Bhishma Dev. Again, you have to understand, Krishna did not raise the weapon to kill Bhishma Dev, rather to provoke Arjuna. Because Arjuna was not fighting. He was always saying, this is my grandfather, this is my grandfather, this is my grandfather. The explanation is given, you know, if you are a doctor and your grandfather is on the table where you have to operate his cancer if you keep crying. This is my grandfather, this is my grandfather. The outside, the relatives are crying. The doctor should not be crying. If the doctor cries, some other limbs will be removed. He should have a proper vision. So there is no question of crying. So Arjuna was crying, not performing the surgery. So Krishna said, okay, you don't do, I will do the surgery. And removed the cartwheel and he ran to Bhishma Dev twice. On the 7th day and on the 9th day. When he ran to Bhishma Dev, second day was really angry. And Arjuna said, no, my lord, please don't break your promise. Krishna did not say anything. You know, he came back, did not speak, because he knew the strategy has worked. Now Arjuna will certainly shoot Bhishma Dev. So this is how Krishna used the Dharma Tantra, the strategy of not raising weapon, but raising the weapon of his kala, his karma, and his time factor. And speaking Bhagavad Gita on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, another brilliant piece. Just imagine speaking Bhagavad Gita, and one of the difficult thing when you give talks. Now this is the most wonderful audience. There are no children around, small kids. When you speak in the Western world, now it's a rule. You can't tell anything to the children. While you are giving class, you know, kids are running around here, there, everywhere. The parents also can't keep them quiet. And those who are listening, they are disturbed. And the speaker is more disturbed. But just imagine, I would always tell, you know, don't worry. You know, these kids are very small timers. Just go back to battlefield of Kurukshetra. Krishna is the speaker, the Supreme Lord, and Arjuna is the listener. But what kind of system, what kind of situation was there? The battlefield, even if the human beings are keeping quiet, what about the horses? What about the elephants? What about the bullock carts? You know, they will not keep quiet. And all the warriors, they had their own, you know, they had to boast, they had to prove their power, they had to prove their ability. And that's what Mahabharata explains. When before Krishna came, all the conch and bugles and the drums and the trumpet and then boasting, you know, war is not the place only shooting arrows. They shoot galleys also, you know, at each other. All the time, we saw Karna and Shalya in their own party only. What to speak of, you know, speaking against other party. That is a quite common factor on the battlefield. So it is not a place to hear Shastra. But again, Krishna proved another principle that you can hear anywhere, wherever there is an emergency to hear. It was an emergency, and the emergency transcended the material surrounding. So that is another beautiful aspect of Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, one Christian priest, he compared the teachings of Jesus, which is spoke on that mountain, where he taught his people what to pray to God. Oh God, give us our daily bread. You know, knock the door, you shall find. You know, seek, you will get. He gave that teaching. And if somebody slaps you, then you can extend the second cheeks also. So he said the difference between what Bible speaks, Jesus spoke, and what Krishna spoke, that what Krishna spoke is the real situation in everybody's life. What Jesus spoke on that mountain is meant for very few ashramites living in the monastery. If you tell a warrior, you know, if somebody shoots you, you know, take another bullet on your chest, it will not function. Most people are in the battlefield situation. And what they need to hear? They need to hear this Gita's teaching. Therefore, he said, the Gita's teachings are more relevant than the teachings of Bible. They are good. But most people are living in the world where they have to struggle, they have to fight, they have to face. Therefore, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita on the battlefield in a most difficult situation, spoke to someone who was not a pandit, spoke to someone who was not a scholar, spoke to someone who was not a brahmana, spoke to someone who was not making, okay, I need to study another book. No, it's not like that. He spoke to someone who was desperate. And how Krishna, you know, such an endearing personality. The problem was Arjuna didn't want to fight. The solution was some other make him fight. If you don't fight, I will fight. Usually when that trouble comes in our life, we assume things. Ho jayega. You know, since we chant Hare Krishna, apne aap theek ho jayega. Apne aap theek kuch nahi hota. Assuming that everything will happen, it didn't happen for Arjuna. He was in bewilderment, and in that condition, he was not able to make a decision. What to do now? So then Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, did not convince him straight to fight, rather he spoke Bhakti Yoga, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. Then he integrated all the yogas in the second chapter in one sense. You know, it's like a khichdi, you know, he spoke Karma, Jnana, Ashtanga, Bhakti, you know, everything he spoke. And then third chapter is the chronological order, speaking Karma Yoga. Fourth chapter is speaking Bhakta, the Jnana Yoga. Within Jnana Yoga is talking about the principle of Yajna. The teaching of Krishna and the teaching of, you know, Buddhistic philosophy is that Buddhistic philosophy talks about uselessness of this world, and Gita teaches of utility of this world. The difference of Buddha philosophy and Bhagavad philosophy is utility means what? This world is not meant to be destroyed. The world is destroyed for you because you die. The legacy has to continue. Therefore, Krishna teaches that you die to live and help others to live. And Buddha taught you live to die. Try to understand very carefully. Therefore, Nirvishesh Shunyavad philosophy, Nirvan philosophy is so negative. It destroys individually and it destroys collectively also. You don't take responsibility. No, when you practice the philosophy of Buddhism, what is it? Life is meant for dying. Life is meant for, you know, uselessness. It is all negativity, all negativity, all negativity. When there is so much of negativity, what does it do? It does not create a legacy. The Bhagavad Dharma is not like that. You know, you may want to die, but there is a generation. You have children, you have family members. You know, then there is a next generation, there is a next generation, there is a next generation. You have to create a legacy. Therefore, in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about yajna. And what is the principle of yajna? The principle of yajna is that you sacrifice so that others can live. A teacher, when he teaches to the students, when in Gurukul he spends his whole entire life teaching, you know, hundreds of students, and eventually he dies. One may say, what is the point in teaching? You know, ultimately you have to die. No, he died teaching, and by teaching he continues to live in the life of the student. Author, when he writes, in writing he has to exhaust his energy so much. It is not an ordinary thing to write. When he writes a book, what happens? The author may die, but author continues to live. Therefore, Prabhupada said, I live forever in my books. Such an interesting concept. What is the concept? This concept is the concept of yajna, sacrifice. Therefore, Chanakya, very interesting, in Chandragupta he told, don't bring Mayavadis close to your place. Don't bring Buddhist people close to you. Don't bring Shaktas close to you. Why? Because when they come to you, your life of positivity will be destroyed. Negativity will rise. Therefore, Bhakti Yoga or Bhagavat Marga is not about futility of life, but utility of life. That is Yukta Vairagya. And Krishna taught this. In fact, Arjuna's principle was, life is useless, what is this, you know, no good. Ultimately, everything leads to death only. Why should I fight? And therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, because of Buddhistic philosophy in India, the kings lost the valor. The kings lost the meaning for life. The killer spirit. Sometimes people say the Indians don't have the spirit of, you know, that killer spirit is not there. They take everything philosophically. Wrong philosophy. You know, sab kuch toh smashan mein jayega. What does it do? It destroys the principle of responsibility. If you are not responsible for yourself, that is bad. But you are creating a long legacy. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, because of Buddhistic concept, the kings brought the concept of non-violence, brought the concept of negativity, and lost the spirit of expansion, lost the spirit of utility. Very dangerous philosophy. And Krishna did not teach this to Arjun. Very systematically, in the fourth chapter, he taught what? Jnana Marg and plus the power of Yajna principle. And in the fifth chapter, he talked about Karma Sannyas. Karma Sannyas is what? Glorifying Jnana Marg. Meant for whom? Very specialized, separate, special class of people. Very special class of people. Not the Bhakti Yogis. Bhakti Yogis may practice renunciation. We were speaking in Nigdi. That Tukaram Maharaj people blame, you know, he was such an avadhut, useless, did not do anything. He was a grihastha, he could not maintain his family, bhakti bhakti karte rahe, kuch apne parivar ko dekh nahi paaye. Yeah, it may be true in regards to his own family, but when Shivaji Maharaj came to him, he also developed renunciation. And fact, it is a reality. He said, and what is the use? He has written poems also. What is the use of conquering so many forts if I don't conquer the fort of my anarthas? He said, all anarthas are conquering my heart. These poems are there in Tanjavur gallery. His poem, Shivaji Maharaj's poems, which talks about renunciation. And he came to Tukaram Maharaj, I want to renounce. He said, no. You are a Kshatriya, your dharma is what? Your dharma is to establish proper culture. He didn't teach him to renounce. Okay, life is meant for dying. Such a negative philosophy. Therefore, the Buddhistic philosophy destroyed the very fiber of India. And therefore, Vaishnavas should understand very carefully, life is not meant to die. Bhagavatam says, do not give importance to death. Do not give importance to life. What you have to give importance for? The principle of sacrifice. That's the most important principle. Krishna spoke in the fourth chapter, spoke fifth chapter, the concept of Jnana Marg, and sixth chapter he spoke about Ashtanga Yoga, and the seventh is knowledge of the absolute truth, and eighth is attaining perfection, and ninth is the most confidential knowledge, and tenth chapter he explained Krishna Arjuna how to see God in matter. People try to see matter in God. We discussed that, how to see matter in God, and that is the difference. Again, the philosophy of, you know, we are not trying to analyze, but we are trying to study properly the difference between Christianity and Vaishnava philosophy. Now, Christianity teaches what? That God is in the kingdom of God, kingdom of God, kingdom of God. There is only one God. Where does he live? He lives in the spiritual world, in the kingdom of God. And what is this place, material world? God never comes here. So, the Christian philosophy teaches, try to subtract God from this world. God does not come here. When you don't see God everywhere, then you exploit the resources what is surrounding you. There is no respect for the material nature. Like one South American environmentalist, you know, gave an interview. He said, when the Christian came to our country, till then we were primitive because we didn't know the religion. But because we were primitive and because of our primitive religion, our mountains were surviving, our rivers were pure, our forests were flourishing, our trees were growing, we were prosperous. And the Christian came with their Bible. He said, what is this? You are practicing primitive religion. It's a bogus religion. You know, you are seeing God in mountain, you are seeing God in river, you are seeing God in human beings. You know, this is offense. You know, God is not so ordinary. They brought and we accepted their philosophy. Now what happened? Our rivers are destroyed, our mountains are broken, our forests are destroyed, and we are only exploiting each other. So here Arjuna raised such an amazing question that Krishna, Keshu Keshu Cha Bhaveshu Chintosi Bhagavan Maya. How can I see God everywhere? Because when you see God everywhere, what happens? The element of respect comes. When the element of respect comes, then you does not treat anything with a disrespectful attitude. In the 15th century, one of the Christian saint, he said that one of the greatest trouble with this world is that God created women. And then somebody else said that animals don't have soul. When you don't see animals having soul, you slaughter them. When you see women, somebody said in the 15th century also that women don't have soul. When you try to remove soul, and somebody else, some other philosopher say anybody who's invalid, you know, lame, deaf, they also don't have soul. Their soul is leaking. It is half soul. Just imagine, this philosophy is there. You know, it has been spoken by very scholarly people. But what does Krishna say in the 10th chapter? Such a brilliant knowledge. You know, Gita is such a book. You know, our life will not be sufficient to study one Bhagavad Gita. What to speak of Bhagavatam? The concepts are so deep. Krishna says to Arjuna, when Arjuna raised this question, my dear Lord, how can I see you everywhere? And Krishna taught Arjuna the knowledge of how to see him in matter. Therefore, the followers of Vedic people, now Dasara is coming up very close. They'll worship the machines. They'll worship the weapons. The farmer will worship his instruments. The Vaishyas will worship their books. The Vaishyas will worship their weighing scale. What does that indicate? It is not that it is God, but the energy of God is there. There is a respect. So that is the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And the 11th chapter is what? Krishna, to prove what he is speaking, that he is the Supreme Lord, he exhibited PowerPoint, universal form. He presented universal form. And Arjuna saw that universal form. And in the 12th chapter, 12th chapter is the chapter of analyzing. Who are you? Where do you stand in bhakti? Krishna speaks about all that quality. When you study those quality, and if you don't have those qualities, you realize, okay, I am far away from being bhakta. These are the qualities for a devotee, but I am so far away from being a devotee. That is self-analysis of your heart. And 13th chapter, you know, is the Prakriti, Purusha and the Enjoyer. A brilliant, another great chapter. And the 14th chapter, three modes of material nature. Gunas. Now the concept of guna, three modes, Rajogun, Sattvogun, Tamogun. You find any Western writer, a philosopher, any Western scripture, even in the most part of the Vedas, the concept of three modes of material nature is a foreign concept to most people. It's Krishna's contribution. Three modes of material nature. Very succinctly, he speaks in the Bhagavad Gita. Nowhere. Therefore, people don't understand why somebody is behaving like that. Somebody is, you know, accustomed to live in the mode of passion. Is conditioned to mode of passion. His lifestyle will be different. And these three modes of material nature are further divided. 3 into 3, 9. 9 into 3, 27. 27 into 3, 81. Prabhupada says, in this way, there are unlimited varieties of three modes of material nature. Therefore, 84 lakh species of life is nothing but the variation of three modes of material nature. 4 lakh species of human beings. What is it? It is nothing but variation of three modes of material nature. Even among the dogs. American dog has a different lifestyle than a Indian street dog. Gaur Gopal was yesterday explaining, somebody in London made a crown for his dog costing 75 crore rupees. Murli Prabhu had to make a crown for Gopinath. 75 crore rupees crown for a dog. And Udupi Swamiji in 1988, they made a crown for Udupi Krishna, you know, for mere 1 crore rupees, and there was a huge, you know, objection by the politicians. How can you spend that much of money for a statue? And he was a very intelligent sadhu. Sadhus are intelligent, supposed to be. He said, you are talking of 1 crore of crown. He said, who are you? You are an ordinary minister, a country's chief. For how long? In India, there is no guarantee for 5 years also. Your seat is always disturbed. And even if you are a prime minister of America, how long do you survive? 5 years? And how big is your country? As insignificant. We can measure it. And for your one travel from one country to another country, how much money do you spend? When Bill Clinton came to India, he came with so many dogs. And every dog was kept in one 5-star room. Many rooms were booked for the dogs. That was the value of our 5-star hotels. The dogs were kept. The dogs were kept. And then his big entourage came. How much money they spent? For what? How long? He said, if you cannot give a crown to a king of the world, who is eternal king, and not an insignificant world, the massive world, he is the master of all the Vaikuntha planets, he is master of Anant Koti Brahmanda, what is this 1 crore rupees? Nothing 1 crore rupees. Like one of our devotee, when Krishnanand Prabhu, I remember I used to go with him for book distribution, he used to go for Bombay Central. And his typical style was, he would tell, you know, I am from Rice University, I have done my MS. So one man was aghast. He said, you are from Rice University and you are doing this now, you have become a sadhu, you wasted one seat. He was saying, just he was saying from that point of view that you wasted one seat. And Prabhuji said, universe are being wasted by not practicing devotional service. So what is this one seat from university? He said, universes are being wasted. So he got convinced by that logic. And then he purchased the book. So here Krishna, no, the concept of 3 modes of material nature is a brilliant piece. And then in the 15th chapter, Krishna talks how to come out of this world. He talks about the reflection, the spiritual world, the material world, like a banyan tree, gives a 3-dimensional explanation, then how to cut off this tree with the knowledge of detachment. And then he talks about very clearly there are 2 kinds of living entities. One is Kshara, one is Akshara, and beyond that there is a Purushottama. Sometimes people say when you become liberated, you become God. Jeev se Shiv ban gaya. Or when you get Mukti, you become God. But here Krishna makes it very clear. There is conditioned soul and there is a liberated soul, and beyond this too there is a Purushottam. Who is that? This is me. That's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And 16th chapter Krishna speaks about demonic nature and divine nature. In the very beginning Krishna told Arjuna, Krishna, Arjuna, you are made of divine nature. You know, therefore he encouraged Arjuna, and then he talked about demonic nature, the principle of anxiety, how does anxiety rise. And in 17th chapter Krishna delineates everything. This is not there. You don't find this kind of concept anywhere. Everything is divided into 3 things. Food. There is sattvagun food, there is rajagun food, there is tamogun food. There is speech. Sattvagun speech, rajagun speech, tamogun speech. Yagyas in 3 modes. Dana in 3 modes. Anything you take in this world, you know, everything is connected to 3 modes of material nature. And in the 18th chapter, again Krishna brings back, he concludes the Bhagavad Gita teaching, and then he concludes, Arjuna, if you don't understand any of these things, if you are not understanding anything, you are feeling impossible to do, there Krishna becomes really compassionate. Arjuna is crying. The acharyas explain that Arjuna is crying. Krishna said, don't cry. Ma sucha means don't cry. Don't cry. Just give up all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. That is the conclusion of Gita. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja. You cannot do all this thing, you just surrender unto me. That he spoke on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the Bhagavad Gita. If billions of people have to be destroyed, if a Bhagavad Gita can come, why not perform that sacrifice? Of course, they were not killed basically, they were liberated. But the Bhagavad Gita came, and Prabhupada said, how long Krishna took to speak Bhagavad Gita? Only 40 minutes. Even just spoke for 40 minutes, and this book which was spoken for 40 minutes by Krishna, even after 40 millions of years it will stay. Therefore, Valmiki Muni explains in the Ramayana, as long as the mountains remain, as long as the rivers flow, as long as the ocean survives, as long as the moon, as long as sun is there, that long the glories of Ramayana will continue to exist. It will not go away. It will continue to exist. Now also in Malaysia, they don't know, but actually they take vow. The Malaysian president take vows in the name of Ram's Paduka. The Indonesia, fully Muslim country, but they are connected to Garud. There is a Bhagavad, there is a Mahabharat, which is in their language. No, very beautifully compiled also. We were in Singapore, and Chinese were doing Ramayana in Singapore. I was talking to Rasnal Prabhu in New York. He said, Prabhuji, please send me all whatever stories you have from Ramayana, because the Americans now are becoming very interested to study Ramayana. They'll be more interested now since the Ayodhya issue also. But that's how Lord Ram and Vyasadeva also, Mahabharata explain the same thing. It has no it will never be exhausted. There is no, it will never be lost. And what is Bhagavad Gita? Just 700 verses out of 1 lakh verses. Krishna spoke that knowledge to Arjuna. And before that, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know, when He came as a peacemaker, I was discussing that how Krishna does not break any rule of the Shastra. You know, see that aspect, because when we say God can do anything and everything, yes, that is His power, but does He do like that? Is He whimsical in His behavior? This story proves when Krishna came as a peacemaker, if you study the whole scene of peacemaking, Upaplavya, how everybody had assembled and there was a discussion back and forth, what should we do, should we fight, should we not fight? And then eventually Yudhishthira Maharaj asked Krishna, my dear Lord, you go as a peacemaker and talk to the Kauravas. We just want 5 villages. The explanation is given that asked for 4 villages which was connected where Pandavas were treated badly. Varanavat, they were tried to be burnt. Vrakastali, something else happened. In this way they asked for 4 villages which they suffered, and the 5th one was for their unlimited crime. So just give us the 5 villages. So Krishna, he said, otherwise we don't want to fight. Including Bhima said, I don't want to fight. Krishna surprised. First time, you know, Bhima is talking about peace. And Krishna said, what happened, my dear Bhima? The sun is rising from the west. You know, what happened? He said, no, I'm not afraid, but we don't want bloodshed. That's what the Pandavas were. When Krishna came out, now Krishna is going for peace. Draupadi overheard all the discussion. She said, my dear Krishna, you've taken a vow. You know, in the Vana, that my dear Draupadi, the entire Kuru race will be destroyed. That is guaranteed. But how is that you are going to do peace? Krishna said, Draupadi, your desires will be fulfilled. The entire Kuru race will be destroyed. Now, if you study carefully, it may sound that Krishna has already decided to kill them. He had no intentions of peace. But was it the reality? No, that is not the reality. One cannot come to this conclusion that Krishna's plan was to anyway destroy. He was only going for the sake of going. He had no such intention of making any peace. That's what people accuse. No. Here the point is, Krishna knew very well that the Kurus will not change. But still he wanted to go. Then the question is raised, what if the Kurus had agreed? Krishna, you know, we beg forgiveness, we made such a blunder in our life, you know, we want to change. What Krishna would do? Change their mind? Okay, no, you have to fight because I promised Draupadi. No, the explanation is given, just like in the Ramayana, when Lord Ram offered, he did abhishek of Vibhishan. Vibhishan came and surrendered to the Lord, and he told Lakshman, Lakshman, go and bring water from the ocean. And the water was brought, and already abhishek was made of Vibhishan as the king. And Sugriva was, my dear Lord, what if Ravan surrenders? Then what will happen? It's not that Ram said, my God, I forgot only. He didn't say like that. Very coolly Lord Ram said, I'll make him the king of Ayodhya. I'll make him the king of Ayodhya. And so what about Bharat? He said, I'll make him the king of Vaikuntha planet. And what will happen to you? I'll become everybody's servant. So Krishna, you can't make Krishna helpless. Or you caught him in the corner. Or what is the solution now? So when Krishna told Draupadi, certainly your desires will be fulfilled, the question is raised hypothetically, what if the Kauravas would surrender? Then what would happen to Draupadi's promise? Then it is explained, the explanation is given, Draupadi is not a whimsical, cruel lady. Pandavas were not cruel. Anyway, they didn't want the war. If Krishna would come with this message, my dear Pandavas, the Kurus want to become your friends. they are willing to have a peace and they are willing to give the kingdom. Would the Pandavas say, Krishna, no, we want to kill them. We don't care, that is our promise. In fact, if you study carefully the promise of the Pandavas when they are going to the forest, Arjuna took a vow that I will kill that nasty Karna. And Bhima took that vow that I will kill all the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra and plus I will break the thighs of Duryodhan and then I will drink the blood of Dushyasan. And what did he say? The clause was put. If they do not follow Dharma, if they don't change their habits. So they were very flexible. But would Draupadi do like that? The question is raised. Certainly, Draupadi would also do. Why? Because when Ashwatthama was brought to her, when Ashwatthama killed all her sons, she was the one, you know, called for Arjuna and Krishna, you know, do something about, kill him. They said, okay, we are going to bring him. You know, we'll bring him and kill at your, we'll bring him down here. When he was brought, what happened? Draupadi changed. So she was not a nasty woman. You know, revenge has to be taken in any condition. If they had changed and if Krishna would tell her, will you forgive them? She would be more than happy to forgive. But Krishna knew that they will not change. Therefore, he was predicting they will not change. But still, Krishna does not deal with the knowledge potency. He deals with the mercy potency. Hope against hope. He came there to Hastinapur. And meanwhile, the Kurus were preparing. Just see, they were preparing to bribe Krishna. They wanted to purchase Krishna by their palace, by their gift. Dhritarashtra said, buy some nice silk from China. We'll give it to Krishna. Cook nice feast, 56 items. By eating our food, Krishna will be contaminated. Then we can ask him to join us. Then once Krishna joins us, what will happen? The Pandavas will be destroyed. Krishna came and directly went to the house of Vidura. And Vidura arranged for a nice food cooked by the Brahmanas. You know the story of Shaka Vidura Garakhayo. It's a good story. It has a substance. It is very much favoring the Vaishnava Siddhanta. But Mahabharata explains Vidura, you know, he arranged the Brahmanas to cook for the Lord. And then he talked to Krishna. He said, my dear Lord, why did you come here? No, it is not right on your part for coming here because they will harm you. These people cannot be trusted. And he spoke so many the bad qualities of the Kurus. Duryodhan especially. He said, these are the defects, these are the disadvantages, these are the qualities of Duryodhan which makes him unqualified to hear from you. Krishna said, I agree whatever you say. But he said, Vidur, this is my responsibility. He said, I need to try. If I don't try, people will blame me. Just see. I need to try. I know them very well that they will not change, but I'll put all my efforts. I'll put all my efforts to convince, even though they are not qualified. So here Krishna's hope, you know, Krishna is the supremely theistic. When somebody loses hope, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, hopelessness is sign of atheism. And therefore, again the Buddhistic philosophy. You know, we are discussing philosophy. Wherever there is hopelessness, Nashwarta, Nirishwarvad, or you know, Nirakarvad, or Nirvan, what is it? You don't have any responsibility to any of your relatives, your friends, your family members, your country, your society. No, nothing. Why? Because everything is zero, everything is useless. Don't take any responsibility because everything getting destroyed. So Krishna does not preach this philosophy. He said, my dear Yudhira, I have to do it. I'll try my best. I'll put all my efforts. And Krishna is speaking as a human here. He said, in performing some good work, even if there is a failure, if there is no success in that work, you still get the benefit of, you know, as if you have actually become successful in good work. So I don't mind failing in this, but I will try my best. And Krishna came to that place. And the first thing they objected, why you did not come and eat in our home? We worked very hard to make prasad for you, food for you. No, why you did not eat? And Krishna told, you know, I was not hungry and you don't love me. If there is no love and the person is not hungry, why would he eat? No, Vidura loves me, therefore I went to his place. And Duryodhan, there was a discussion and eventually Krishna spoke. He gave a very simple logic. He said, look, Duryodhan, Dhritarashtra. He said, the Pandavas are like the tiger and they are like lion. And Kauravas are like the forest. He said, if there are no tigers and lions in the forest will be destroyed. Because there are tigers and lions, nobody wants to go to the forest. When the tigers and lions are destroyed, what happens? Everybody comes and destroys the forest. He said, the forest requires tiger and lion, and tiger and lion require forest. Therefore, understand, you are complementing each other. And Krishna said, the Pandavas are like the tree, and the Kurus are like the creepers. Now he made the real point. If the tree is broken, the creepers will be destroyed. If the creeper is broken, the tree will survive. And then, when they were not willing to listen, Duryodhan became very angry. He said, why everybody is blaming me? I am not at fault. I have not done anything. I have not done anything. I simply acted according to the response of Yudhishthira Maharaj. There is no fault in me. And why is this Vasudeva command is taking the side of the Pandavas? Then Krishna told, bind this guy, bind this Duryodhan, bind this Shakuni, bind this Dushasan, and bind this Karna also. And give it to Yudhishthira Maharaj, then the entire Kuru dynasty along with their allies will survive. But they would not listen. There again Krishna manifested his universal form. But they were not devotees, they did not take it seriously. Dhritarashtra said, you know, Krishna showed him the universal form. He saw the universal form. But again he said, Krishna, make me blind again. I don't want to see anything else. Because reality would hurt him. Unfortunately, Dhritarashtra could not handle the reality. And Gandhari came and spoke, telling her husband, you are responsible for whatever is happening. Do as Krishna is saying you. He said, that is not possible. He said, I can give up the entire world, but I cannot give up Duryodhan. It is not possible to give up Duryodhan. Then Krishna left Hastinapur. We studied about how he met Karna, tried to convince him, but he would not agree. He said, Krishna, let us meet on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. My only benediction is that, see that, as a warrior, I only die on the battlefield, not in the bed in the home. Just see, again, the sacrifice principle is that you don't live so that try to extend your life. That is a materialistic civilization. And neither you live to die, nor that you simply try to live as long as possible. Rather, you live for sake of others. So there is some principle of sacrifice, he said. A kshatriya, when he dies on the nice bed, that's the greatest disaster for him. That's the greatest disaster. Therefore, when Drishtadyumna, Shikandi and all the sons of Draupadi were being killed, especially Drishtadyumna said, don't kill. Don't kill me like this. Kill me with weapon. If you kill me with weapon, my glory will be there. Ashwatthama was so brutal. He said, I will not kill you with weapons. I will strangulate you. And he strangulated Drishtadyumna and killed. He said, you don't deserve the death of a warrior because the way you killed my father. Kshatriyas don't want to be killed like that. And that was the greatest, that was the more pain for Draupadi. You know, my brothers were killed not the way it was meant for hero's death. So Karna was very clear. He didn't accept anything from Krishna, but he said, I don't want to die on the deathbed. Where I want to die? On the battlefield only. If my death is supposed to happen, let it happen there. So the mission failed. Krishna tried. Krishna sincerely tried to make peace, but they would not agree. They came back. The preparation for battle began, and the messengers were sent back and forth. And then eventually Balramji decided, let the battle happen on the field of Kurukshetra. And he realized, if Krishna is fighting on the fight of Pandavas, you know, there is no hope for Kurus. Whether he takes weapon or he does not take weapon, let me go to Yatra. So Balramji went for Yatra because some other he had some kind of affection for Duryodhan. That was good for Duryodhan. You know, he had no qualification, but still Balramji had an affection. That shows this is how, you know, Guru functions. How does Guru function? He becomes affectionate to someone who is not qualified only. So Balramji did that, but of course he did not take part, he walked away. And then Krishna utilized so many strategies, but the strategies were not done with the intention of being a pervert. The strategies were only to establish dharma. And while in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, one time there was a conflict between Arjuna and Yudhishthira Maharaj. It became such a big conflict because Yudhishthira Maharaj always worried about Karna. Why is he not killing? Why is he not killing? And one day Karna, you know, hammered him very badly, and Yudhishthira Maharaj became injured and he came back to the tent. And Arjuna was looking, where is my brother's chariot? I don't see his flag. He told Krishna, Krishna, please take me to the tent. I want to go and see my brother. What's happening with him? Such an affection was there. But when he came there, in the middle of the battle, Yudhishthira Maharaj became very happy. He was in ecstasy. Oh, Arjuna must have killed. I hope you have killed Karna. And Arjuna said, no, I just came to see you. So that disappointment, first time Yudhishthira Maharaj spoke harshly, he said, throw your Gandhi bow in a garbage can. So when he said that, anyway Arjuna wanted to do it in the beginning. He wanted to throw, but when Yudhishthira Maharaj said that, Arjuna had taken a secret vow, vrata. So here is a very interesting principle. Krishna did not take a vow, it was tantra. Therefore he did not break the vow, rather he simply, you know, was playing the tantra. When Arjuna had taken the secret vow, anyone who says, anyone who insults my Gandiva bow, I need to kill them. If I don't kill them, I will commit suicide. Nobody knew about this. So Yudhishthira Maharaj said that, why did Arjuna come there? To take care of his brother. But what did he do now? He removed his sword. The Kshatriya blood is there. He went to attack Yudhishthira Maharaj. Krishna said, what's happening? He said, you know, this is my vow and he has spoken ill about my Gandiva. Arjuna said, what nonsense is this? Your whole purpose of coming here is to protect your brother, see the well-being of your brother. Now you want to attack, but what can I do with my vow? Then Krishna speaks about the principle of dharma. He said, Arjuna, the principle of dharma is most important, not your vows. If your vow is creating a violence unnecessarily, uselessly, what is the point of that vrata? He said, there are many ways to fulfill your vratas. I remember one story I read, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciple. He was traveling in all the holy places. Then he came to one temple and he was very austere sannyasi. During Ekadashi he would do Nirjal. But when he came to this place, his god brother, without knowing that he does Nirjal Ekadashi, he prepared a nice feast. For someone who always fasted, fasting was feast for him. Somebody is fasting for so many years to create that break. No, if you have vows and if you follow it for so many years without any difficulty. So when he offered that feast, he said, since a god brother, a senior god brother has cooked with such a heart, he said, how can I not eat? Ultimately, what is the purpose of fasting? To please Krishna. And then he honored Prasad and he fasted next day. So Krishna told Arjuna, Arjuna, there are many ways to fulfill your vows. He said, one has to create minimum violence in life. And you have come with the purpose of protecting your brother, but you want to kill him? He said, it is not right. And Krishna told him the story of that Kaushika Brahmana who had taken a vow of only speaking the truth. He said, I will never speak the truth. He spoke the truth and by speaking truth, he went to hell. Because when the cow came asking shelter, and the butchers came afterwards asking, where is that cow? And he was thinking, what should I do? What should I do? Maybe this is a test for me to, you know, the material energy testing me to prove my ability of not telling the lie. He said, okay, the cow is hiding here. the butcher killed a cow. Krishna said, what is the value of such truth? And he told another story of a hunter who killed animals, and by killing animals he went to heavens. So Arjuna said, my dear Lord, then how do I handle this? My vrat is there. We have to understand again, for them, when they would take their vow, they would give their life, but never. You know, we take vow and we forget vow also, what vow we took. What to speak of following that. And then another vow is broken. Then there is no record also how many vows we took, how many vows were broken. Then we take a vow that I will never take a vow. And then we take another vow. So for us, you know, it's a very easy thing. Therefore, in now there is Kali Yuga, there are bond paper, there are legal lawyer, then on this paper and that paper, and they prove that paper also to be fake. How much Kali Yuga is such a... Therefore, we don't understand. They are taking vow means it's a question of life and death. So Krishna, how will I do it? Krishna said there is always an alternative. We discussed that also. He said, what you do? You blaspheme Yudhishthira Maharaj. You always respectfully address him. Mahabharata explains the Hindi translation of the word is Arjuna Hamesha Yudhishthira Maharaj ko aap karke pukarte the. Then he said, what do you call him? Tu karke pukar. Just see, that is as good as killing your superiors. When you call a superior by his name and in a disrespectful way, you are killing them. So Arjuna addressed Yudhishthira Maharaj. Tune to jugar khaya. Tune jua khaya, isliye hamari aisi halat ho gayi. He gave 3-4 bad words to Yudhishthira Maharaj. Which, whatever happened, he said, tu, it was as good as killing. And then Arjuna felt very bad. How could I do this? How could I address my brother? Just see, now he wanted to kill. Now he's feeling very bad that he addressed Yudhishthira Maharaj in a disrespectful way. And Arjuna took his sword, he wanted to kill himself for behaving like this. Krishna said, what happened? First you wanted to kill Yudhishthira Maharaj. Now feeling so bad, you want to kill yourself. You know, just see that how a living entity functions. This is what we learn. He said, you know, how can I live after insulting my brother? He said, there is another way to kill yourself. What is that? Glorify yourself. When you glorify yourself, that is as good as committing suicide. Anyone who glorify money, ye kiya mane, wo kiya mane, itko mara mane, usko mara mane, isse jeeta. He said, self-glorification is worse than committing suicide. There is always a solution for everything. So then Arjuna glorified himself. Because he wanted to die because of doing this offense against Yudhishthira Maharaj. And then Yudhishthira Maharaj went, he said, because of me only everything happened. And because of me Arjuna had to suffer so much. He felt offended, he felt hurt, he felt bad. And Krishna pacified. Then both Arjuna and Krishna and Yudhishthira Maharaj said, my dear Lord, if you are not there, we don't know what would happen to us. And then they took the shelter of the Lord, offered obeisances. Yudhishthira Maharaj blessed Arjuna. Arjuna received his blessing. And they knew that Karna's death was guaranteed. This happened just before Karna's departure. How Krishna talked about dharma properly in the Mahabharata. Therefore, while living in this world, what does Mahabharata teach? You know, Mahabharata teaches practicality. Practicality which is rooted in the scriptures. The practicality which is rooted in the wisdom of the great souls. If the Indian people or the people of the world follow the teachings of Krishna, you know, of course he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, he is the source of all the incarnation. But even if you see how the Supreme Lord did whatever he did, and whatever he did without any agenda, Krishna was very clear, he never became the king. He only appointed kings. And after appointing the king, he never stayed there also. One thing, when you appoint somebody as the king, but you stay in that country, what you do? You always interfere. Don't do like this, don't do like that. The king has no independence. He is a king. But what? Who is ruling? Somebody else is ruling. That is worse than not being a king. If you are a king, you need to be given full independence. Like, you know, we were I was saying that in Detroit, I think I told that story. Bill Ford, the chairman of Ford Company, he was not able to do it nicely. So he openly, publicly told, he said, I've tried my best to bring the company to the higher levels, but I'm not able to do it. So therefore, we appointed somebody as the chairman of our company, and he actually withdrew from all the decision making. I've done my play, but I was not able to function properly. And he appointed, we are talking about Ford because Ford is connected with, you know, if the Ford makes money, that is good for ISKCON. Amrish Prabhu's, you know, shares expand and he can help build a temple. So then he appointed somebody else and he gave him the full responsibility, withdrew. He said, I will not take salary as long as our company does not grow. And this man came and he was a very revolutionary person, known to be very revolutionary. And he started changing every principle what he established. Left, right, center, everything he changed. And he did not speak even one word. I gave him the independence. I am paying him more salary to do all these things. Let him do. And within no time, their share from $1, it became $14. This devotee was telling me. And he works in that Ford Motors. So, we see that how Krishna, when he would appoint somebody as the king, he appointed Yudhishthira Maharaj. He was there as long as they were suffering. When they were established as the king, what he would do? He leave that place. He would not stay there. Try to control remotely. He never became the king. It was all, even if you see from a mundane point of view, who, which person in this world, which political leader, which company head, he gives full responsibility to the subordinate and walks away. Even if he walks away, he goes with a BlackBerry, always controlling from a distance. Is it happening like this? Is it happening like that? So Krishna is the Supreme Lord, supremely controller, supremely powerful, but has the power to be completely detached. Therefore, whatever he did, no gain for him. There was nothing gain for him. He did not get any commission. He went back to Ayodhya, he went back to Dwarka with those, his own people to perform the wonderful pastime. In this way, he established the Pandavas, which was the original goal of his coming, because they were the righteous people. He made them samrat. After destroying the entire the race of bad Kshatriyas, and the Pandavas ruled for 30 years, and then Parikshit Maharaj ruled for 60 years, the 90 years rule is worth, even 3 days of dharmic rule is much more powerful than hundreds of years of adharma. Because when you go on the path of adharma, however fast you go, it cannot be compared to walking on the right direction even one step. We cannot compare. It is uncomparable. So all the efforts of the Lord to make the Pandavas king. How long? People say, Bhagwan aur kitne saal ke liye Pandav log raj kiya? Keval 90 saal ke liye. Uske baad mein kaliyug chalu hi ho gaya. Now because of that 90 years of rule, we are still able to discuss and get inspired and establish Krishna within our heart. Establish Krishna as the king within our heart because of the rule of the Pandavas. 40 minutes of Bhagavad Gita we discussed. Krishna spoke for only 40 minutes. But even after 40 millions of years, because he spoke originally to Sun God, even after 40 millions of years, this Bhagavad Gita is still creating a revolution. And Prabhupada gave that Bhagavad Gita to us, which Krishna spoke on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And how many copies are being distributed? How many people have got benefited by this? How many people are getting benefited by this? How many people will get benefit in the future? As long as this Mother Earth remains, as long as people are able to read and write, as long as people are there to hear and speak Bhagavad Gita, that long Bhagavad Gita will continue to affect. When we cease to exist, when the material nature ceases to exist, the Bhagavad Gita will not cease to exist. It will reappear when the creation starts. And therefore, that is the song of God. The song of God does not work for only 5 minutes, just like in the film. How long does it function? It works eternally. Therefore, Krishna's role on the battle of Mahabharata had many facets. He was great strategist, he was a philosopher, he was a peacemaker, he was a superhuman, and ultimately he exhibited greatest detachment by walking away from Hastinapur, placing the Pandavas. And when Krishna was walking back to Dwarka, Kunti offered those most beautiful prayers. Krishna, you are going. Now, because you are going now, we might forget you. That is the conclusion of actually Mahabharata in one sense. What she said, my dear Lord, please continue to stay here. Because if you are here, no, she said, you are going, we want more and more suffering. And that means doing all that efforts, Kunti is not only asking suffering, she preached to her sons also how they have to act as a Kshatriya. When they did their best, when everything was established, then if you pray for suffering, Krishna, give me suffering. Why? Because she actually experienced suffering. They overcame suffering by their efforts and by the help of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now for her to ask, Krishna, give me suffering so that I can always remember your lotus feet, is the conclusion of the Mahabharata. So therefore, following in the footsteps of Kunti, you know, we should do our best to undo the difficulties what come in our life, in our own life and in the life of those who are connected to us, and that is Krishna consciousness. In doing, in a way, pleasing, keeping Krishna in the center. And when everything is done, all our responsibilities are done with, then praying for our perfection, that we have to go back to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And whatever it takes us to go back to Krishna, that should be also done. Hare Krishna, Shri Mahabharat Ki. So I'll stop here, and I thank all the devotees and others for giving their attention and response for all the 7 days. And all this knowledge, whatever we heard, I have to share one. I was referring to 2-3 books. If you don't share where you get the knowledge from, you know, that is cheating. Somebody does the hard work. One Vaishnava scholar from Mysore, he was a grihastha. He was a professor in a college, and he did a lot of hard work while studying, while teaching, raising his family. Great inspiration is that, he's a householder, coming in a very poor family, but studied Mahabharata. Whenever he had vacation, he would go around and teach Mahabharata to people, to revive the culture of God consciousness. And then he, studying very systematically from the scriptures only, and some other we got those informations, those explanation, and with the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, what he has given in our sampradaya. So this scholar is Dr. Narayan Acharya, a brilliant scholar. So we also acknowledge his contribution for this. And then of course in the Bhagavatam, in fact, Prabhupada wrote to one devotee that he wanted to translate and give commentary on Mahabharata, and wanted to write commentary on Ramayana. So many things he wanted to do. But, Krishna wanted him to focus on the Bhagavatam, and he gave the Bhagavatam and he took him back. So, it becomes, the responsibility of devotees to understand properly and challenge those who are misrepresenting the Shastras. Most people who speak Shastra, they speak wrongly. So the very rare souls in this world, extremely rare, who are very honest, they want to only present Vyasadeva. And this is what Vyasadeva's contribution is. He presented what actually happened without speculating, and those who follow in his parampara, they are the only people who get benefited. His Bhagavat, his Mahabharata, his Bhagavad Gita, his Vedanta Sutra, his Puranas. What does it do? It simply brings out in a great light the personality of Krishna. Such a fascinating personality. How can we not be attracted to Krishna? Even if you see as a human being, which he is not, we always have to see him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But even if somebody does not see him as a Supreme, but just go through with this understanding, with this mood, then Krishna is the fascinating figure. He is the most attractive figure. Therefore, we see that art, poetry, drama, movies, songs, literatures, stories, some other people, you know, at some point of time, when they get bored with all, you know, fiction things, what do? They come to Krishna. They have to come to Krishna and take his shelter. So, rather than we going indirectly, therefore Prabhupada in his books, what he did? Straight. You know, straight he gave us to Krishna. And the best way to come to Krishna is the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra which Mahaprabhu gave. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. I thank once again to all the devotees for giving me chance to speak Mahabharata. You know, it's a very vast, we could only cover a little bit. Hopefully in the future, you know, the rest of the wonderful stories from the Mahabharata can be discussed. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Radha Gopinath ki, jai.
Hare Krishna, kindly be seated for 2 minutes please. Actually, I wanted to be here on the first day of this series to introduce Govind Prabhu and also, you know, start off this Mahabharata series with him by introducing him. But somehow, because of some reasons, I couldn't be here. So on behalf of the Journey of Self-Discovery Department, which holds these 6-session courses every month, we would like to express our deepest heartfelt gratitude to Govind Prabhu for having agreed. It took a great task to convince him to give this course. You know, it's easy for him to go to Nigdi and speak, he says, but to do it here is very hard. So it's really hard to convince him, but it is kindness that he agreed. In Nigdi, he spoke the same subjects for 21 hours. And when we were organizing this, he said, why only 7 days? Give me 3-4 days more. So somehow, but 3-4 days more means most devotees can't come for 10-11 days at a stretch. So we then thought we'll do it for 7 days. But I'm sure all of you have experienced the extensive knowledge and research that he has done in the field of Mahabharata. I'm sure you have experienced his profound wisdom. I'm sure you've experienced his inspiring words. And I'm sure you've experienced his deep insights, not just in the Mahabharata, but in every area of Shastra and philosophy. So, to have him is a great honor. And I'm sure all of you are very fortunate to be able to receive this wonderful lectures and discourses from His Grace Govind Prabhu. So, I would request all of you to kindly join me on behalf of the Journey of Self-Discovery Department to extend a very, very heartfelt gratitude by 3 times, very loudly chanting, Hrivo! Hrivo! Hrivo!
He made me an outsider.
No.
I am from Radha Gopinath. It's my duty.
He is from Radha Gopinath, but to get him to speak at Radha Gopinath is very hard. New York is easy, Nigdi is easy, Belgaum is easy, Belgium is also easy. But Chopati is so busy, it's hard to get him. But we are making him a request that the rest of the Mahabharata very soon will once again organize this lecture series and continue this lecture series further on. But thank you very much, Govind Prabhu, for taking out your time and giving your valuable time to speak on the Mahabharata. His Grace Govind Prabhu ki jai.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai. Kaur Premanande Hari.
Thank you.